Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to another excellent episode of Brainstorm Brewery. Yeah, this is episode number 64. It's a special episode. We got a new beat going on to celebrate 64, because 64 reminds me of Nintendo 64, one of the greatest game systems out there. Many great times with that, so, you know.
We count our episodes in binary, so 64 is a big one. We're not going to do anything until 128, so live it up while you can now.
So you guys got any memories from Nintendo 64? Was that a system when you guys grew up, or am I just too old for you guys?
I played in 64 earlier today. I played Mario Tennis like 2 hours ago.
That's sad. Why not Wii Tennis?
Why?
Like if you're going to play 64, play a 64 game. Like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark or Smash Bros.
Obviously, but Star Fox is good on N64 too. But Mario Party 2 is like actually the best game for N64. Hands down.
I wouldn't say that. Not the best. It's actually
what?
GoldenEye. GoldenEye is the
cast with the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Normally we do that at the end.
Yeah, Ryan put his foot in his mouth at the end of the cast. You made fun of it, so now we get to make fun of you now.
Mario Party, I'm standing behind that. Mario Party 2 was one of the top 5 games for N64.
Wait, you said the best game, and then you said it's not close. Now you're hedging it. Oh, it's in the top 5.
I mean, you didn't even go with like the best game of that type. Like Super Smash Brothers is just infinitely better series.
Smash Brothers
That's exactly like Mario Party, right, Ryan?
I'm just saying, it's that same kind of like fun gamey type of like, you're not, you know, it's not GoldenEye or anything like that.
Fun gamey type of game, huh?
Yeah, it's like a party game.
Thanks for coming to my rescue.
It's a Timmy.
A party game, exactly. It's a Timmy. It's the casual EDH format of N64 games.
It's Timmy, the FM grinder
N64.
Hey, so we do have a party in here. Someone brought over some encased Nordic meats, and so we got an artist here in the house, better known as Polish Tamales.
Hey, it's me, Mario. What's going on, guys?
Hey, how you doing? I'm glad that you could join us.
Italian accent the whole time, because the name Polish Tamales is ethnically ambiguous enough that like people be like, I always knew that guy was Italian.
Oh man, you guys just brought out the geek in me when you guys talk about 64.
Yeah, I mean, real talk, what's your favorite N64 game?
Oh, Jesus God. Literally, Smash Brothers was my favorite one.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to beat.
We used to actually hook up, like, to get the AV jacks into the TV. We had to play through the VCR. So one day we got the idea, why not just record our game? So we would, like, sit there and watch tapes for hours of this Smash Brothers.
Jason, some of our younger viewers just said, what's a VCR? Thought you should know.
Good
I don't think so. We got 8-year-olds out there who love MTG Finance.
Dude, no, VCRs, think about it, dude. Like, 16-year-olds play Magic.
No, the last movie that was put out on VHS was A History of Violence. That was what, 2004? 2005? It was somewhat recent.
If you have a 16-year-old listening, they were like 7 then. They probably don't remember that shit. Just saying.
So you're saying when they were little children watching Barney and shit like that, that it wasn't on a VHS tape?
I said they probably don't remember.
They don't remember being 6 years old and watching. Okay.
I don't think they remember
Let's go with that. 16-year-olds don't remember VCRs.
Why are you guys so mean to each other? Do you guys like each other?
Corbin and I will never hang out.
An unnamed person is just really mean on this cast, and his name is Jason.
Yeah, we got a letter from a fan that said that we were a little too rude with each other, and we just want to let everyone know that this is all fun and games, and we actually do love each other, no matter how much we may call, you know, tell Corbin to shut up, or say Jason's an idiot, or just watch Brian put his foot in his mouth, you know, it's all good humor.
I don't get that. Like, when you're hanging out with a group of friends, are you polite to your friends, and then if you encounter a stranger, you shit-talk them? I don't get it. I exclusively shit talk my friends. So the fact that I tell Corbin to shut up means we're good buds, clearly.
He's pretty much mean to everybody, though.
Shut up, Corbin.
Shit's another level.
Mean, though. Like, Jason goes from being your friendly, like, you know, the shut up stuff like that. When he's actually mean to somebody, it's an intellectual kind of mean. Like, he will make them feel inferior. It's fairly entertaining to watch.
It's entertaining to watch. It's entertaining slash makes me want to blow my brains out after the two of you argue with each other for a week straight.
That was a good time. That was the best cross-country car trip ever. Oh, did I mention we took a cross-country car trip together? Because that totally happened.
By the time I joined that trip, you two were already trying to kill each other.
That's just how we get down, man.
You guys are already giving each other cease and desist letters.
Oh, what a great segue you just set up.
No segue talk.
So,
just pour it in a box of bulk. This is awesome. That just happened. Literally been missing for 6 months. I had to sneak into Canada with just my birth certificate because I couldn't find my passport. I guess it's been like a year now. Yep, so happy I found that. Anyway, continue.
So, Polish, tell us about what's going on in your life and what's been going on with the Wizards fiasco. If everyone doesn't know that he's been getting a lot of flack, Wizards, for a lot of his drawings. He's done his fan art for the people. Some of them have been sexually explicit, you could say, or suggestive, and that may draw the ire of Wizards and their lawyers, but it sounds like you came up with a decent solution or something's going on and working in your favor. You want to dive into that?
Yeah. Let's start off with something here. Like, most of the people on 4chan and on Reddit, they all assume that I actually drew full-on porn, which isn't the case. I've actually never drawn any of the Planeswalkers fully nude, like not even nip slip. So I don't know how these guys are coming to the conclusion that I've been drawing porn.
It must have been from Reddit, right? Of
course. It was mostly from 4chan, actually. 4chan all assumed I was drawing porn.
That's because they wanted you to have drawn porn so badly that they figured if they said you had, that would make it true.
Well, someone from Reddit actually does, he actually does that on every thread I make. He wants to see the nude version. So I guess it's a thing for the internet anyways. But it all started, back in when I actually started doing comics for Mana Deprived. And when I started posting up, these comics for Mana Deprived and transferred them over to DeviantArt, I got like a decent amount of, decent amount of fans following me there on DeviantArt, including I got detention of Steve Argel, which now we're pretty good friends now. But at that time I was like incredibly hyped that he was like looking at my stuff. And, that's good encouragement for just about anyone that's just starting off doing comics, I guess. And, shortly after that, around fall, they all got deleted. Like, the whole folder just gone overnight. And when I was asking around DA, like, hey, what's going on? They said that someone reported me in and they had to take it down based on some sort of DMCA clause that was sent to DA. And, I had to wait for about, almost an entire month to get, the straight answer who actually, sent out those DMCA clauses. And it was actually a lawyer from Hasbro that was basically saying, hey, you're using our copyright characters and potentially selling them through DA. We can't let you do that. And that wasn't even the case. Like, I wasn't even selling the pieces of art. They were just there on display, just for people to enjoy. Because, they're freaking comics. But, that's when all the problems just started, was that one lawyer at Hasbro felt that I was trying to make money off their properties, which wasn't even the case.
Okay, so you've been contacted by a Hasbro lawyer at this point. On a scale of 1 to 10, how completely did you shit your pants when you got that first letter?
I did not shit my pants at all. I got depressed. Like, if anything, I got depressed because it just meant that it just kind of killed the drive to actually do more comics or even do fan art in general. Because up from that point, I never actually did fan art. Like, I've always done my own stuff or do graphic design. I've never actually done like full-blown comics featuring, fan service, a way of saying it. So I was just freaking depressed. I didn't even do a comic for like almost a year after that.
Mm. Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Cause you just felt violated. You felt the sense of trust.
I felt kind of like betrayed because it's like, hey, I'm celebrating my love for the game. And then, you know, Watsi or Hasbro came in and said, no, you can't celebrate it that way. We just can't let you do that.
Now, what was it that they, clearly they weren't actually scared that you were trying to make money. That something you drew was objectionable to them. Do you know
at
what it was?
Time.
Can you, yeah, okay. So what was it that you drew that they objected to? Was it anything sexually suggestive or?
At that time, there was nothing sexually suggestive. If anything, they just felt that, oh, there's a print option on DA, but it's currently disabled, but he could turn it on and sell these.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah. Which I never did. You know, they were just there for fun, but it was enough to prompt, the lawyers on Hasbro saying, you know, he could have done it. So let's take him down. And that's what they did. They sent out like at least a dozen DMCAs against me to take down my entire Magic folder.
DMCAs mean what?
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
And what that entails?
That basically allows basically almost anyone that owns a certain, you know, intellectual property to basically request to take it down based on certain things. Like I would literally have to Google and give you the actual answer for
okay,
this.
No, that's probably.
Yeah, just make
it's that what, clear. It's basically what people always use when, you know, copyright is, they believe a copyright's been infringed upon, pull it down.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Like, you see that a lot from Hollywood, like, whenever there's, like, some sort of illegal link to, like, let's say Breaking Bad, like, the premiere episode, you're probably going to see, like, a few links that are taken down on Google search, and it'll say that, DMCA clause taken down.
But I mean, it's clear, like, you were not, and did not have any intention of actually, you know, profiting from this, and that's,
yeah,
you know,
like,
sort of your frustration.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it. Like, it wasn't even part of the plan to make money. It was just me just say, hey, I've got a joke. Here, let me show you guys. You know, I just want to tell a joke. I just want to entertain people. And yeah, I just felt betrayed after that. And you know, the way it was handled wasn't the greatest way in the world. You know what I mean? Like, when I brought it to Mauro's attention, basically, I guess everyone's just kind of, I guess legal told them not to answer or interact with me afterwards. Until they actually said, okay, here's a community manager, talk to him and he'll sort out everything. It was never really sorted. Like, if anything, it just basically, like, the whole situation after that was, okay, whenever you do any kind of work, just run it by a lawyer. Or use our fan art kit and follow the rules that the fan art kit says. But the thing with the fan art kit says is anything that's in this folder or anything that we provide is okay.
Huh.
Being user generated, it doesn't really cover.
Huh.
Especially in terms of fan art, you know what I mean?
Right. So, is it fair to say that, you know, had they actually worked with you on this, I mean, there wouldn't be the hard feelings? Cause I mean, it's not like, I don't think anyone's here saying, you know, we should be free to do whatever we want with Wizards intellectual property. I mean, they are a business and, you know, that's certainly understandable, but
yeah,
like you said, you're not trying to make money off of it. And they, I guess your position is they didn't really work with you and just letting you know what you could and couldn't do.
Yeah. So I guess like after working with Medina, at Legit MTG, you know, Medina gave me the chance to just re-enter the community, you know, almost like a fresh start, you know, through his FNM Heroes series. And because of that, you know, it gave me more motivation to, you know, let me step back into the fan art community and, you know, just basically entertain people at the same time. So I started with a Tumblr account, just so I can, you know, restart things up again. And, you know, shortly after, it suddenly became like from a personal blog into like a sketch request site where people in the Magic community started to hit me up and say, hey, can you draw this? Can you draw that? Can you draw Chandra with Jace? Or can you draw Soren with Jace? You know, miscellaneous things like that. Like they just want me to do, you know, they just wanted me to ship characters with other characters. You know, that's a term they use on Tumblr, which is, you know, pretty common. If you guys never used Tumblr before, it's a safe haven for basically nerds and geeks where people can just talk about anything they want about the things they love, you know, especially with Magic, you know, it's a great place. So majority of players there are mainly Vorthoses. You won't see a whole lot of Spike players. You'll see a lot of Timmies and, what's the other one? Timmies and Johnnies? Yeah, Timmy and Johnnies. There's tons of them there.
Do you know this, Ryan?
Which one's the FNM grinder?
There are no FNM grinders. Rarely any FNM grinders.
Or anywhere.
Yeah, you're looking at the hardcore commander crowd here when you're looking at Tumblr.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much the hierarchy there.
So Tumblr is where you got a lot of these sexually suggestive comic sets.
Yeah, this is where it comes in. Most people don't know this, but like at least 80% of my followers or people that request are women. So they're the ones that are requesting these risque drawings of kissing, touching, and shipping guys on guys. And even girls on girls. Like, most popular one is the Chandra and Liliana one. And that's what
I think I might have seen that one.
I don't want to know what you did with that.
Ignore Jason. Continue your story.
So I continued doing this up until the same lawyer from DA stepped in again and said, hey, mind if you don't draw our characters doing this stuff? And they couldn't talk to me directly, so Tumblr had to be like the middleman. So we were exchanging messages between Tumblr and them. And since I felt that, hey, this falls directly under fair use and parody laws, you know, I have every right to do this because this is strictly under parody. At this point, it is parody, especially putting these characters in these, you know, sex stories, which aren't even explicit. So the lawyer got salty about it and pursued more DMCAs against me. And she brought down like an additional dozen DMCAs and nuked a few chunks of my Tumblr blogs, like literally taking chunks off my Tumblr blogs of, you know, images that they felt that was too saucy or just too racy. And obviously it kind of got ridiculous. So I just reposted them under even like more, I guess, make it more clear that this is under fair use. And eventually it got pretty heated. Like I would just constantly just do more, and especially the community. The community was all for me. Like all my followers felt kind of like, I guess they felt sorry for me that I got singled out. And at the same time, they feel like it could happen to them too, because they're also doing similar things with WotC's characters. Like they're using their characters to RP, or they're also doing what I'm doing, is just doing fan art in general. So there was a huge following on the Tumblr community to basically back me up. And then I guess one day WotC decided to have enough of this and told the lawyer over at Hasbro to just knock it off. We're just going to reassign this case to in-house, and we're going to deal with Polish tamales this way rather than letting you just burn through a whole wad of cash with these DMCA clauses. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
So what year is it at this point?
This is this year. So this was around, I want to say March of this year.
And how long had this been going on total?
This was going on for almost like 2 years between me and the lawyers.
Jeez.
With Hasbro's lawyers, not WotC's lawyers, but Hasbro lawyers.
Right.
But, eventually WotC's lawyers, their attorney, God bless her, she's a nice lady. We actually had a chance to talk, on the phone and try to resolve, how can I still entertain the community and still, you know, be, basically on good terms with you guys? And they basically said, just tone down what you're doing. That's all they wanted me to do, was just tone it down. And for the sake of all the followers, because I have like almost like 1800 followers on Tumblr, I agree. Like, I'll just tone it down and continue what I can do with the community.
Okay, so do you feel that you did go too far with some of your drawings? Because I've heard, I mean, I'm a fan of your artwork, but I've heard people say that you've gone too far and that you were just, you know, doing
I can mention names, right? Like, there's like, I can mention Lansdale? Yeah, Lansdale felt that I was going too far. Yeah, Chris Lansdale felt that I was going too far with the drawings. Not even the case, because he's only seen a couple, but he made some bold statements. Again, like the 4chan crowd, assuming that I drew porn. So a lot of people did have that misinformation that I was actually drawing like actual penises or actual, you know, nipple shots. Never the case. Like, what I did was just erotica for women, because, you know, people that are requesting these images are women. That's what they want to see, you know, believe it or not.
True, but what about the line of this is a child's game? And that you're creating these, I sure it's not penises or anything, but they're still sexually suggestive, characters of a child's game. Do you think that there's a concern there that's valid?
Well, in a certain way, the blog itself is pretty self-explanatory, because it actually does mention, hey, you might want to go back if you're under 18, because this is my personal blog. It's not like a website. It is technically a personal blog.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, like, if it's a children's game or not a children's game. If, I mean, you're an adult and you can do whatever you want with that, assuming you stay within legal guidelines. Like, the fact that the game is marketed as a children's game doesn't change anything legally.
It just makes them look good when they're trying to, you know,
paint you as a bad guy or something.
Yeah, just make them look good saying that this product appeals towards 13 and up.
Right. So, okay. So take us back, so what, you agree to tone it down. What happened after that, or where are we at now?
Well, what's happening right now is that, we're fine right now. Like, me and Watsy, we're fine, but the only fallout from this is that there's certain websites or especially certain people, they don't want to work with me because they assume that, again, I did porn with the Watsy characters. Like, they assume I did lewd things with their characters and shit.
And that, yeah, and that's not the case. So you're
not even the case. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's just, it's like, yeah, on the one hand, you can see why Wizards has an interest in this. Like, you know, it's not necessarily something they just want to let go because, from their end, if you look at it from their perspective, what you're doing, may not be explicit or anything like that. Well, then maybe it takes that step into explicit, and that's something they want to try to head off if they can, if possible. So, like, you can see where they're coming from. It sounds like in the beginning they went about it all wrong and burned.
Oh, yeah. Like they didn't give me any warnings the first time, like on DeviantArt. Right. No warnings. They just nuked it and just kind of walked away.
Right. So, like, I guess you said it's a Hasbro lore, so, like, probably somebody who doesn't know Magic, who just is just sitting in an office going through all of Hasbro's intellectual property looking for this stuff. Is that kind of the impression that you got from it?
Yeah, in the end, yeah, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not the only one that does Magic fan art, so I wasn't sure why I was singled out for so long, because everyone else was still doing their stuff, but they just felt that they had to single me out for about 2 years.
So, tell us what you want to do then. I guess now at least the only good thing that's come out of this, I guess, is that you've reached an understanding with Wizards, so you can keep doing what, at least some of what you were doing. What do you want to do with it? Where do you see this going and yourself going? Where do you want to get in Magic, in the future?
Well, the first thing's always been entertaining the community, because that's the reason why the blog's still going, is the community wants to see what I do with Watsy's characters. Like, they want to see how I interpret, Blood Raid Elf and, even Burning Tree Emissary. They want to see me doing interpretations of those characters. And, some of my most famous characters that I've actually redone and most heavily requested is, like, Liliana of the Veil. Mm-hmm. Like, people always ask me, hey, can you do more of her? Can you do more of this? And eventually, yeah, I did release, like an emblem pack for everyone to print out, like, completely free. Like, hey, here's my gift to the community for being so awesome and following me. Here's, like, a master print file so you guys can print it out and, cut out your own emblem tokens. So for now, it's just continuing, I guess, entertaining people within reasonable bounds. Like, I'm still going to follow what Watsy wants me to do, is to play it safe with the characters, but...
Mm-hmm. There's the... and we haven't mentioned it yet, and I'm not even sure what the validity of this means or if it means anything legally, but it's not like Wizards Art is not sexually suggestive.
Of course not. Liliana itself, right?
Right. I mean,
Steve Argyle had to take back the original artwork.
Well, yeah, he did. He did tone it down based on feedback he got from the art direction. So, like, you're a little harder to control for them because you're outside of, you're not contractually obligated to tone the art down the way Steve was. So that there's a certain costume look to Liliana they were going for.
Yeah.
What about a Mata Worm? Come on now.
Oh man.
Those that look like these cards that inadvertently look like, penises bursting out of the ground or whatever, like an Armada Worm. To me,
I think if you look at Armada Worm and see a dick, you really wanted to see a dick.
Yeah, like
What about Korchak's Menace? It looks like a vagina. Like, I mean, you cannot deny that.
Well, the thing is, it's not sure. I mean, that's whatever. But like, to me, that's not as much of an issue as like. And if it's an issue at all, like the Triumph of Ferocity, you remember when that came out and that was some restored and everyone was going crazy about that. That sort of stuff, I think, is more the concern.
Yeah.
I don't think Armada Worm implies anything sexually, whereas, to some people, Triumph of Ferocity did.
I mean, Triumph, yeah, certain people, that kind of imagery does trigger some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can kind of see why there was a controversy behind that. But, this is fantasy art and things like that are often depicted even in like video games. And sometimes we're just so used to it, we don't really realize it. But to other people that, when that actually happened to them, it'll trigger them.
Yeah. I mean, like to me, when I look at a card, like when I see a spoiler come out, like cards don't have art to me. Like I know what the card does. I can recognize it by its picture, but I don't actually look at what's happening in the picture. So like I don't ever catch these things.
You're the worst, Corbin.
No, I'm the same way though.
The cards don't have art to me. Like it's just I look at some cards when they blow the picture up on the mothership. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then I look at a card in front of me and it just never registers.
You know what? That's true. Like there's times they blow up the picture and there's things that I've never seen or like I completely did not see the picture right until it got blown up. So I can relate with that.
I didn't know where Tarmogoyf's head was for years.
I still don't know where it is.
You don't even see it. Like you just recognize it in the abstract, but you don't even see what's going on in the card. But that's because like obviously I'm a spike and I care about what the cards do, not what they look like.
You just want to grind FNM.
So have you ever thought about getting into doing alters or proxies or anything around those lines?
For me personally, not really. I am thinking about making like original tokens so it doesn't really cross the line.
That's sweet. Yeah, because you did our sweet tokens, we could plug them now.
I've seen one of these original tokens you speak of, and I think it's a great idea.
Perfect.
Yeah. Jeeves actually found a really good spot they could do them on playing cards, so you can get some nice. Really, yeah, so they could be pretty well made.
Yeah, so, yeah, I get requests all the time. Not many people know this, but I get requests like every day to draw people. And it's not because I don't like people, it's just that I get too many requests to draw people. So I might come off a little cold and not do them immediately, but down the line, I'm still planning on doing it. Just that, you know, it's like every day someone new pops up says, hey, can you draw me?
Kind of like the Durfington effect?
It's like the Durfing, yeah, literally just like the Durf effect where everyone's just asking, hey, can you Durf me? Can you Durf me? Can you Durf? Durf? Durf.
Oh my God. And you got to spend some time on these drawings. Like how much does it take you average to do one of these?
That's the thing. It's like, it depends on the person because like I would have to figure out like, okay, how am I going to make you look sexy on this little piece of cardboard? A little 100x100 pixel. How am I going to make you look sexy? So maybe like an hour or maybe 2 hours, depending if I've never seen you or actually ever drawn your body type or something like that. So like 1 or 2 hours, maybe just so everything's just pristinely vectorized for your, you know, convenience. But yeah, there's just too many. Like most of the time people don't even offer me money. Like they just straight up say, hey, can you do this for me? And they don't really like compensate me. You know what I mean?
They understand the value. Yeah. You're an artist.
Yeah. Well, it gets worse because some people think it's like $5 and, no, it's not going to cost you $5 for an avatar. I don't do that.
Well, how much is it?
That's going to be pretty much like person to person. So it's kind of going to be kind of private, but generally.
Oh, you charge more for fat people. I see how it is.
Yeah.
Good draw.
You found out.
That's bullshit.
What's the barter system for tamales?
Got them. What's that?
I got wholesale tamales over here.
Well, yeah, I'll give you the John Medina discount where you're going to get like special discounts and stuff. All the time.
For sure.
But, yeah, most people just assume I work dirt cheap. Not the case.
Oh, no. you got legal fees.
Yeah, and everyone, you just got to respect people that it's like with Maddie and Durfington and just anyone that does, you know, anything that takes art, you know, people that do music.
Yeah.
Like the beat, like my friend, you can look him up. He's on SoundCloud. It's Cave Rousseau. I'll have the link in there. You know, he spends time and he puts his effort into making these beats. And if you're an artist, you know, you should compensate the people that you like the art. And that's just, you know, part of being the community. So, you know, you got to pay for what you get. And, you know, that's how.
I'll hook people up with discounts, but, $5, that's not even going to pay me lunch. So that's a problem. And also a lot of people don't realize this, but I actually do like production and storyboards on the side. Like I did entire storyboard series for Playboy. For their animated series on their Playboy channel. So
Playboy has an animated series?
They had an animated series. It was
Playboy had a channel?
They had a channel. people used to pay money to watch Playboy on TV.
You missed
the boat. Like if you have Playboy TV channel, it's hard to make the argument that you just want Playboy for the articles at that point.
I guess you would probably watch them for their news.
It's a good documentary.
For the Playboy News.
Yeah. Playboy News.
Better than Fox.
Foxier than Fox.
Do we want to move into the picks of the week or some kind of finance? I know that our fans are probably mad at us. You got to understand, we're going to have this. Sometimes there's some slow finance weeks. and we're going to have some guests that are non-finance people, really.
Oh,
and
we're sorry we got you a great guest from the community to tell relevant stories that are entertaining.
Yeah, we can't mold every guest to fit what our theme of this episode is. So if you don't like it, just switch it off and come back to the next week.
If you can't, I feel like as a Magic player, you should be well-rounded in that. You know, like things like this are relevant, I think, to people, even if they're here for the finance.
We're actually lecturing our fans right now. This is great. This is good stuff.
Defending fans. You guys are lecturing. I'm trying to defend them.
Nah, I'm lecturing them. I don't need to hear this shit no more, you know? Like, if we bring someone else and you don't like it, I understand that. That's cool. You know what? But just deal with it. Suck it up.
Marcel's not going to take any of your shit.
This is a community service that we do. You know how much time I spend? Yeah, Jason knows now how much time goes into editing the cast and actually putting into this. And, like, you know, if I was to get paid for my job, it'd be, you know, quite expensive. But, you know, it's just...
But we do it because we like it.
We love this, so, you know.
We do it because we like you, our listeners.
We do it so we could tell Corbin to shut up, really.
Now we're going to do it so we can talk about some picks of the week. Who wants to start?
Picks of the week! Sorry, that's the music I composed for Pick of the Week. Do you like it?
It was really good. It was a really good
piece. I'm going to need way more than $5, though.
That's completely legit.
I don't think you're going to get more than 50 cents for that one, though.
Oh, that's brutal. All right, Picks of the Week.
I'll start. I'm going to talk about a card that's been tearing up block that seems like it's pretty much bottomed out at this point, and that's Blood Baron and Viscopa. Now that M14 is out, you know, not a lot of Dragon Smith is being open. Blood Baron, like, it came out to 10, and then, you know, it spiked a little bit on the actual release by the Pro Tour. It came down a little since then, bottomed out at $8, and is now starting to climb a little bit. And if you haven't looked at, like, you know, motor results of block events, this card is all over the place. It's got protection from a lot of the relevant removal spells. It is an aggro killer if you're control. Like, it's better than Obsidat in the 5-drop spot because of that lifelink and the protection. Like, it just comes down and can shut down the board. And then theoretically, you know, it gets huge, but that's pretty irrelevant. But the point is, it's a good pickup, and it's not the finisher that Aetherling is, but it is the card that gets you there. So at $8, it's pretty much bottomed out. I don't necessarily see why it goes much lower, because we have to assume that those block decks will translate into standard after rotation. So, like, Blood Baron at $8 right now seems like a pretty safe pickup to me. And tangentially related, Mizzium Mortars, I think, is also going to continue to go up, because if you try to, you know, you can't guess individual decks post-rotation, but you can look at it as all these control strategies that are really good in block are running Blood Baron and Jace and Sphinx's Revelation. And, like, those seem like pillars of the format that probably aren't going away. On the other hand, you have, like, the red-green aggro decks that are still going to have Domri and Gore Clan Rampager that are also probably not going anywhere. You know, the only way for those decks to deal with Blood Baron is going to be Mizzium Orders. And I think so that's going to be also an important part. So both those cards right now I'm picking up.
I'm sorry, Corbin, what are they keeping? They're keeping Domri and they're keeping...
Or Clan Rampager.
Okay. They're losing Flinhoof Boar. They're losing... I don't know. I think the deck is going to be a complete facelift, you know, come rotation, but...
Right, but, like, you just bet on the power level. And Gore Clan Rampager has proven itself to be insane, and so is Domri.
Sure, but I think you're getting a little bit more mid-rangey at that point. I think the average mana cost of the deck is going to go up.
I mean,
You're losing... I don't know. Maybe people will go into Rakdos for their one drop, so it's...
Well, like I said, the card I'm betting on there is Mizzium Mortars. So, like, regardless of what you are, like, Mizzium Mortars is going to be, like, probably the best way in the format to kill Blood Baron, because Doomblade won't do it, and a lot of other stuff it has protection from. So, like, my pick out of that is Mizzium Mortars, which, like, it seems like it's going to be the most effective way to deal with Blood Baron, regardless of what kind of deck it's played.
Yeah, that seems about right.
So that's what I
now that Corbin's done two picks of the week.
Yeah, it kind of just flowed.
You figured Ryan wouldn't do one, so you'd...
I got going. I couldn't help it.
Okay, I got one. If no one else would like to go next. Nobody?
Go right ahead. It's all you.
Thanks, Marcel. I'm the talent now? I just got promoted to the talent.
Yeah, until Ryan gets a correct mic, he's been demoted. You're our runner-up talent.
All right, if I'm the talent, does that mean I don't have to turn in the show notes? That'd be great. Okay, I want to talk about a little card that I said was going to be a card at around $1.25, and everyone said, no, you're bad. Okay.
Is it a card now?
No, it's a card now. So I don't want to indict any certain website, but I will say that there is a website that 2 or 3 days before Beck and Call was spoiled, all of a sudden on this website, Cloudstone Curio went up and up. And this certain website bought me out on eBay, bought lots of other people out on eBay and TCG Player, had a lot of them in stock, and all of a sudden they were $10. Then Beck and Call was spoiled, and everyone's like, oh, okay, that's why Cloudstone Curio is so expensive. You can play a combo elf deck. Now, back in, I don't know, it must have been 3 or 4 years ago, when it was still extended, I designed an Intruder Alarm Opposition elf combo deck. I didn't come up with the original concept, but like I tweaked it a little bit, and I liked it. And our buddy Aaron the God Slayer Sula very nearly top aided with it, and then 2 weeks later top aided with it. So we really liked the way the deck worked, and we were running like Sprout Swarm and stuff like that, ways to infinitely combo with Intruder Alarm. And I like the way Intruder Alarm plays with elf combo much better than Cloudstone Curio, because all of your mana elves are good, not just the Heritage Druid combo. And most of the defensive people were saying, making for Cloudstone Curio was, well, you can, you know, bounce your, like the elf that destroys an artifact when it comes into play and do cute stuff, but it wasn't, you couldn't go off with Sprout Swarm, you couldn't go off infinitely with, what is it? the guy that taps to put it on elf token. Anyway, like.
Imperious Perfect.
Imperious Perfect, right. You couldn't go off with that. I think it's way more consistent with Intruder Alarm. So finally, Travis Wu actually made a deck that is running Ant Queen and all kind of craziness like that. And for whatever reason, Intruder Alarm's now like sold out everywhere at $4. Cool Stuff Inc. still has a few left at four, but it's, you know, completely sold out on other websites around four. And all but their played copies are left. I think Cool Stuff has like one left. So this is a card if you did manage to go deep a long time ago, I would be selling them now. And you could probably still trade for them a little cheaper because, you know, no one expected this to be a card based on how much everybody argued with me when I said it would be a card. So I bet that that attitude still prevails, and you could probably pick these up in cheap in trade because people just don't think it's good. So I don't know if four is the ceiling. I think if it actually puts up real results beyond, hey, Travis Wu mentioned this, I think it got like the initial Travis Wu bump.
Yeah.
But I think if it actually does something, this, you know, could potentially, even having been printed twice, could potentially, you know, be a real card, like maybe $7-$8. I don't know. Like the way the modern season has made prices shoot up ridiculously has completely made me reconceptualize how I think about how prices are going to go. Intruder Alarm could be 15. I don't think so. I think it would have to be in a lot of decks. You know, I don't think Intruder Alarm should be more than Birthing Pod, for example. But it's something to watch, and I think you probably sell them now. I don't think it's got too much farther to go up, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. So this is a card that if you've got them, sell them. If you don't have them, try to pick them up cheap and trade.
I'm with Jason on the sell them part because the it's not like when Beck Call came out, people weren't trying to play with this and Cloudstone Curio. And I'm still of the opinion that Cloudstone Curio is better, but I mean, this is 100% attributable to Travis Wu. I think it went like, it may have 4-0'd one daily on somebody a couple weeks ago I saw, or 3-1 or something, but like the bump right now is entirely Travis Wu. So I think you sell now because I think it will probably tail off again by the time we actually get to modern season next summer. Remember, it's almost a year away before there'd be any real spike on it. So, or, you know, a second spike, I guess. So I'm with Jason that you sell them now and try to pick them up again later for cheaper if you think, you know, there's something there. But as this, there have been other cards Travis Wu has promoted before that have spiked in price and then tailed off and not gone anywhere. So, you know, time will tell whether this is one of them.
Fair. My pick of the week kind of falls in line with Jason's as well. I kind of went a little more generic with it, though. I know, Corbin, I believe you were the one who had talked about this before, but yeah. Heritage Druid. I've noticed on TCG Player the prices started going up over the past week or so. And I think, you know, whether it's Legacy that gives it the push or Modern or a combination of both, this card, you know, hasn't been reprinted yet. And up until they do, they're just getting more and more scarce, even though it's an uncommon. I mean, it's already closing in on $4 on some of the auction sites and has surpassed $4 in retail. And I think you can get these in trade for the most part because people will put them in their binders because they know they're worth something. So you can usually get them for $2-$3. And I'm fine picking them up with that because I could see this if it's not reprinted as an F&M promo or something in the next year, I could see it hitting, you know, 8 to 10. Because all it's just as rare in most cases as Intruder Alarm is, because, you know, it's only printed in one set. And I think, it's the one piece of every Elf deck that has to be there. It's not interchangeable like Intruder Alarm. Like, it's, you know, Legacy isn't going to run that, so you don't have that obvious boost from there. And I don't think there's any other pieces in the deck itself that you have to have that haven't been printed at least 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, nothing, like Nettle Sentinel, for instance, but that's a common. But yeah, I was all about Heritage Druid. Like, the first thing, those are the two cards I hit on when that call was pulled, was Curio and Heritage Druid, and Curio then spiked to $10 or whatever. Heritage Druid didn't move at all, but it certainly has in the past 3 months or so. Like, there's no reason this set probably doesn't continue to push 5. Because, like, unlike Intruder Alarm, this has a place even if the deck doesn't take off in Modern. Like, it's a 4 of in a Legacy deck. You know, a good Legacy deck at that. So, like, it's a really safe card to get into.
What about you, Paulus?
Yeah. Well, for me, like, I play the Legacy whenever I, well, not Legacy, but Modern whenever I can. So, one of the cards that kind of piqued my interest, like, a while back when, you know, Wapotapa was, you know, doing some of the dailies was, he was using Shadow to Doubt in, you know, in his control lists. And, you know, it is perfectly legit card. I mean, it stops, you know, quite a few things in the format. I mean, you can screw up, you can basically screw up certain strategies like, people searching Squadron Hawks and Soul Sisters, fetch lands, and you can probably delay a turn against Birthing Pod. But, you know, it's pretty nice tech, you know? And, back then they were like, I want to say like 5 months ago, they were like less than a dollar.
Yeah, they spiked to like 2 or 3, and then they spiked again in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, you noted on your Twitter, you know, here's something to look out for, and, you know, it's happening. It's like currently sold out on both TCG and the other side for $6.99. So, what are you guys' thoughts on that? Like, is there more room to grow since this is like one or two of in all the blue, white, red flash decks?
I mean, like, it's a one or two of until somebody decides that it's just insane and puts it at a 4 of and then top 8 something, and then it's a $10 card. And
easily,
like,
yeah.
And the thing is, like, you mentioned Birthing Pod. Like, it does more than delay them for a turn. Because, like, one of the common lines of play with Birthing Pod, if they don't just immediately have the combo, is to just, pod a Kitchen Sphinx into a Restoration Angel, because that's just a whole bunch of value. Well, if they pot away their Kitchen Sphinx and then you respond with a Shadow of Doubt, like, then their Kitchen Sphinx all of a sudden has a counter on it and they don't get their Angel and they can't even, then they have a counter and they can't start comboing. Like, it can really blow out Birthing Pod.
Well, doesn't Shadow of Doubt prevent the player from searching their deck?
Yeah.
Right. So they can't get, okay. They can't get their Restoration Angel.
Oh, right. I
so
see.
So then they can't accept their Sphinx. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And if they stack something that doesn't have Persist, it's even worse for them.
Yeah. There we go, yeah.
And just the fact that it kills the fetch lands, like, that's like blue land destruction.
Yes, and it cycles, and it beats Scapeshift, and, like...
Yeah, destroy a land for 2 mana, and you get to draw a card. This sounds pretty insane.
Yeah.
So, it's really weird. Corbin was saying earlier, look how far from Modern Season we are. There's no precedent for the whole Modern thing, making the prices spike so far outside the season. Do we really think a card's going to heat up in, like, August of 2013, and then in, like, May of 2014, it's going to stay that price the whole time? Or is some of the stuff going to just inevitably go back down because no one's playing with it in paper?
I think it's just the price that is being set. This is people are speculating, and people are speccing on cars. That's where you see a lot of these cars being bought up, and if there's not going to be the supply out there, you have to pay the price.
Yeah. I think it, like, if it, you know, spikes, if it goes, say it goes up to $10, like, I don't think 4 or 5 months from now it's $10, but I don't think it's the $4 started at either. You know, like, it's probably like 7 or 8, and then is ready again during Modern Season if it spikes again. Like, I think the answer is that we're seeing that Modern is not extended of any variety. Like, people care about Modern outside of Modern Season. And that is, it's like Legacy card spike. Well, there's no Legacy season. It's kind of the same thing. Like, people are starting to care about Modern outside of playing a PTQ.
Well, it's an F&M format too. It's an optional F&M format, and some shops are running it once a month.
Right. So, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, I don't think that necessarily, like, if a card spikes and it's somewhat like a Horizon Canopy, you know, somewhat fueled by speculators, Horizon Canopy's come back down. Like, I don't think it's like, oh, any Modern card went up, it's going to stay there for sure because Modern's a real thing. But I don't think it's going to settle back down to where it started either. Like, so Shadow of Doubt's not going to be $3 again.
Yeah. Well, and there's also the thing that you have to consider is, like, where would this card see a reprint? Because it's such specific hate.
Yeah, it could, like, randomly be in a commander or something like that, but it's pretty, like, it's not necessarily going to be a wide reprint, I think.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, I don't see why. I, like, it's a one-of right now or whatever. Like, I'm sure people were playing with more of these, and sooner or later may break through, because, like, the card is very, very rarely bad. I think that's one of the biggest things. Like, it's an absolute blowout against some decks. Other decks, you're just going to land destruction them and cycle, which is great. And then, like, in very few decks, it's just a two-mana cycler.
Yeah.
You know? So it's, like, the downside on the card is very limited.
Yeah, very worst-case scenario, it cycles. So it's never dead. That's exactly what you said, and I don't know why I said that.
All right, what do we want to touch on next? I guess we talk about, you know, cards going up because of hype. We were kind of talking about it before the cast. Like,
well, I'll say, yeah, buy into your Modern Masters now if you're on Modo.
Okay.
It just seems like there is bottoming it out as far as, like, the prices have pretty much settled. And if you're going to get into Modern, you want to get into it now. Supply is about as high as it's going to get. And, I mean, Tarbagorf is the one that's seeing climb up, is up to 70 tickets now. It was at 50, but everything else is pretty much settled. So, you know, if I was going to do anything, I'd be picking up the staples, at least getting some play sets of definitely Chalices, you know, like Engineered Explosives, Eternal Witnesses, Arcbound Ravagers. Just pick them up because they're just going to go up when Modern Season comes. Yeah, I mean, it's going to take like a year, but that's pretty much free money there. So I'm a little nervous. I just don't have enough money to put in as much as I can, but.
Yeah, like, I'm not upset about Modern Season change. Like, the only thing about that I guess is a major downside is that it made, like, the Shockland speculation worse, because you're not going to have, what, you know, Signal from QS called the perfect storm of rotation landing on top of Modern Season, where people everywhere need shocks. Like, now people are going to need shocks for rotation, and that'll probably cause them to go up. But then it's like, by the time we get to Modern Season, people are going to stop caring about them. It's going to be rotating from Standard. So it won't be that perfect storm to explode their prices. But so that's, like, the downside. But the upside, I think, is it just gives us all this more time to pick up these Modern cards that we think will go up during the season that right now are still kind of low. Like, I'm also pretty high on, like, all the staple uncommons for Modern Masters, like Spell Snare, for instance. I think, like, it's not going to go lower than it is right now, and it just got reprinted, so probably won't be reprinted again soon. I think it just gives us more time to pick those up.
What about, hey, Corbin, what about Path to Exile, the F&M promo? Do you think that thing's just going to, like, double?
The $10 F&M promo one?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm surprised, honestly, that card isn't worth more than it is worth already.
Yeah.
Because there's, like, I get that it's been printed a million times, so that's why the regular ones are what they are, like $4 or $5 or whatever. But yeah, like, I mean, they keep reprinting it. It keeps not dropping. Like, I have no problem getting into the promos at $10. I think they're just continuing to go up.
Okay.
It may be, like I say, it may be slow because we're not yet to that point where people are pimping out their Modern decks, but, like, that day will come, and then those will be pretty chase.
I just want to take a minute to thank Exhibit personally for making pimp be the word that people use for foiling out their deck, because it doesn't make any sense really in context unless you remember that the show Pimp My Ride made us use that word wrong forever.
That's so true.
Thanks, Exhibit.
That's true.
I don't think he listens to our podcast, actually.
Are you kidding? He just followed me today.
George and Marcel said, man, I love your podcast.
Yeah, we're Brainstorm Brewery. I thought you knew. Like, you know, we're around famous.
He thought we were about beer, and he was disappointed, but then he listened.
We're going to be at Outside Lands next year. We'll be on stage performing Corbin jokes.
I don't know what that is, but that sounds exciting.
I didn't know he was, he actually did things.
So now Corbin started to, like, try to segue into something we wanted to finish on. Then he got away from it. Then he started eating ice cream loudly in his mic. So I don't know where we are on that. Do we want to try to pick that back up?
Yeah.
We want to talk about the perfect storm and, really just rob us of our momentum.
What we were talking about, and we were kicking this around before the cast, is the concept of the self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of speculation. So, like, Shocklands, for instance, everyone has been saying that Shocklands are going to go up, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, I agree. I think it's true they will go up. At some point, though, people say, it can reach a point where you say, oh, this card's going to be good. This card needs to go up in price. And just by virtue of enough people saying it, enough people out there will buy in and then it happens. It's kind of like, you know, intruder alarm with Travis Wu. Like, Travis Wu says this card's good and people buy it. You know, is that real demand or is that hype? Or, you know, is that a, if 100 people decide that a card's worth double what it is and they go buy it out and they double it, I mean, they didn't really, it's the difference, I guess, between predicting the market and manipulating the market, even if unintentionally.
And it happens a lot of times without people meaning to. Like, QS in the forums made Didgeridoo go up as a joke. Like, nobody thought Didgeridoo was going to, like, be in Theros or, like, you know, they'd print a Minotaur, would it be good? Like, they were just joking, and everyone's like, I'll buy a few copies, LOL. And then there are so few Didgeridoos out there, and dealers started to see, hey, somebody bought all our Didgeridoos today. We had 8 copies. We sold 1 Didgeridoo between the years of 1998 and the years of 2013, and we sold 8 in one fucking day. Take them down! Take them down! There's a run on Didgeridoos. So everybody, you know, starts to see, oh, this is what we've seen before in all kind of other prices. So it really was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And even unintentionally there.
It was totally unintentional.
Yeah, people weren't manipulating. Like, people weren't like, we're just going to pull one on the market and go buy all Didgeridoos. It's, some people said, oh, yeah, there could be Minotaurs. It only cost me a few dollars to buy a couple. I'll take a shot. Yeah, so few out there, makes it happen. I mean,
and then the buy list price went up. That's the best part.
Whatever happened with Lauren, that big old fiasco?
Yeah.
I have some and I can't move them.
And that's what, and Lauren, you made the argument that Lauren was like, you know, malicious, I guess, in intent.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones that really made me embarrassed to be a financier. Like, a lot of the other times I'm like, oh, come on, Didgeridoo was a joke, chill out. But the Lauren thing, that was, I would not be hesitant to use the word malicious. You're right, Corbin. Somebody said, okay, we have advanced knowledge, most likely, that they're going to put the recruiter out as a judge foil. So let's try to corner something that's under $10 right now, A. B is on the reserve list, so can't be reprinted. C has only been printed once. And D, like, is the marquee card in the one deck that people would want this new card. So that was just, like, all those factors combined to for them to target Alluren, and, you know, people bought into it at first. And, you know, the price is still high, but no one's buying it at that price because nobody wants them. So, like, there are dealers sitting on a big stack of them, but nobody wants them. So that was probably the most malicious example.
Yeah, I mean, that went up, like, I mean, MTG stocks went from $5 to $25 over the course of less than a week. And since then, it's just steadily trailed off. Nearly back to the point where it started. I mean, like, nobody on this cast, I think, you know, advocates that sort of thing. Like, there's a difference between trying to predict the market and trying to make the market. And one of them, I think we all agree is, you know, not good for the community. And the other is what, you know, some people are very good at doing. I guess, like, how, as a listener of this cast or a player at home, do you distinguish between what is a, you know, a malicious buyout or is something that, hey, maybe this is a spec I should really get on? Like, I think we all agree that Shadow of Doubt right now is a pretty solid one. Like, is a, you know, a somewhat really real driving spike, not hype. Like, how do you differentiate between that and something like Intruder Alarm, which may go up this week because Travis, we talked about it, and then may never do anything again?
That was a very subtle way of hyping your own pick and putting mine down at the same time.
Yeah.
Your pick was to sell Intruder Alarms, was it not?
It was Polis Somali's pick was the Shadow of Doubt, not Corbin.
Oh, yeah. Corbin's pick was so forgettable.
Your pick was to sell Intruder Alarms. I just agreed with you.
Good. You should agree with me.
Anyways, how about you answer the question and actually give somebody at home something valuable? How do you distinguish between the two? Replace Intruder Alarm with Alarm.
The malicious ones are based on something we don't know yet. When a certain store, not going to indict anybody, but we all know who it is, you know, raised the price of Cloudstone Curio to $10 because Beck and Call hadn't been spoiled yet, that's malicious. When Travis Wu plays a card and it goes up because he demonstrate that it has value, that's not malicious. I think if it's something that hasn't happened yet and people are speculating on something that will happen, either because they have knowledge or B, because they're like, okay, Theros is confirmed as an enchantment block. Maybe we want to buy stuff that's good with enchantments. That's one thing. But if it's like, oh, we got the God Book and there's a card that's really good with a card that's in M14 and we'll buy a bunch of those. I think that's malicious. Because when there's nothing you can point to, it's like, oh, it went up because this daily, this deck list, this article. If you can't point to anything, then it's most likely somebody doing something in bad faith.
Insider trading.
Wait, so
how
does that apply towards the fetch lands from Zendikar?
Well, I think the answer there is that, like, you can point to the deck list. Like, they are all, when Star City raised their buy price on those, and bought them out and spiked the price on them, like, there were the results to back that up.
I think that's a better question than we're giving it credit for. Because I think there's another reason to buy cards that we didn't talk about, which is these are going to go up eventually. Like, every Magic card that gets played is going to go up in price. So it was weird that people were like taking turns buying things out. They're like, okay, this week I've got the money to buy all the Rashidun ports. And then Rashidun port went up. And then it never went back down because it's Rashidun port. Where are you going to get more? And then it was Caracas did the same thing. So there are cards that are going to go up. Like, I think if you have a $30 Verdant Catacombs and a $55 to $60 Scalding Tarn, why isn't everybody buying Verdant Catacombs? Because Verdant Catacombs was 15 when Scalding Tarn was 30. Now Scalding Tarn is 60. Verdant Catacombs will be a $50 card in the next few months. It's going to go up. It's certain to. So that's another one of those things where, like, it was going to go up eventually, but nobody wanted to be the first person that made the move for whatever reason. No one got around to it. And then somebody got around to it. So I think that was one of those unique cases where it was always going to go up eventually, and it happened in a shorter time frame because someone took initiative.
I also think, like, to further answer that question, like, Scalding Tarns and Misty Rainforce, after they rotate from Standard, were sitting at like $8 to $10, and they continued to move up. They continued to move up. It wasn't like they had sat flat at $8 for, you know, 2 years, and then someplace bought them all up and they doubled overnight. Like, they, you know, naturally had climbed from like 8 to 10, all the way up to like $17, $18 before Star City made their move on them. So, like, at that point, they're spotting a trend and they're acting on a trend rather than creating a trend. So I think that gradual growth is, you know, another factor to look towards. And it is tied to, you know, the actual playability of it. It's going to, like, if it's continuing to rise on its own, like Shadow of Doubt was, a buyout after that makes more sense because it shows that the demand was there before somebody manipulated the market. So I think that's pretty good to, it's a pretty good indicator, is if the growth is gradual and then there's a spike on it, that spike's more likely to stick than if there's no growth and it spikes out of nowhere. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge topic. I think we've touched on it before and we could probably talk about it for hours, but I think, like, for you playing along at home, if you see something spike, like, those are the factors to look toward to see, you know, to determine if you think that this is something that can hold or not.
Yeah, so it's really a question. The what people want to know at home, I think, most of all, is do I buy or do I sell? And I think if it's a spike out of nowhere, like, you haven't seen anything yet, or you think it's, you know, somebody manipulating, or it's, you know, there wasn't gradual growth, that's probably when you sell into that hype, because it'll probably come back down. But if it's going up gradually and you start to notice a trend and there's something to back it up, I think that's when you buy into it.
And to be honest, like, this was I don't know if mistake's the right word, but it's a lesson I think I learned, because, you know, we've talked about it before. When I first started in with Magic, it was like the year before Zendikar, and I saw how expensive old fetch lines were, and then I saw how expensive, like, at the time, like, Reflecting Pool was, and I was like, oh my gosh, how can you play Magic? These cards are so expensive, these lands, you have to spend $1 million on this. And I was like, well, I sure wish that, you know, I knew about this when this card was cheap, like people saying their dual lands were worth $10 back 10 years ago or whatever. It was like, well, I wish I was around then. And I realized it was Zendikar lands, I actually was around then. So that's why I went in really hard on them. So then when it spiked, like the big buyout, I took my own advice and sold into the hype, which, like, isn't wrong because, like, I quadrupled up on them, which is great and everything. But, like, I think maybe I got scared there and pulled the trigger and didn't take into account that gradual growth. So, like, that's, like, my number one rule for speculation is usually sell into the hype, and that's rarely wrong. In the case of the fetch lands, like, I think I could have looked a little deeper and maybe not sold all my stock, like, maybe hedged a little there. But, I mean, it's just something to keep in mind.
You wrote an article about that, didn't you?
I did. Well, not about what I just spoke about. I wrote about I wrote about selling them and why I sold them. And the gist of that article wasn't even financially basis. You should sell them because when you speculate on something, you make your money, you sell your cards because profit's profit. And if you do something worthwhile with that profit, you shouldn't feel bad about it. In my case, I brought my wife a housewarming gift when we moved into our new house. So
I thought you said you did something worthwhile with it.
Anyways.
Wait. I want to do one more.
I learned a lot.
I'm sorry. Are you going to talk?
I'm done. I got nothing else. What else do we want to talk about? Are we done?
What was that easy to get you say you're done talking?
Oh, man. Shut up, Corbin.
Shut it up.
So are we going to do that for the next t-shirts?
How would you get that on a shirt?
We just do the same thing.
This Shut Up Corbin on the t-shirt. I think that's a capital idea.
All right. I think we'll sell those. Because they look good. They did look good.
Good on spring tees.
Yeah, we did a spring tee. The problem is we had two shirts and only one of them made it.
We had four shirts. Or five.
There were too many options.
It was an embarrassment of designs.
Hey, you got to mess up the first few times.
I would wear a Shut Up Corbin t-shirt to an event. That'd be fun, right? I'd certainly get some weird looks.
Right, because no one knows your name's Corbin, so that'd be weird.
Hey, so if we paid you $5, could you draw us a Shut Up Corbin?
Okay.
Yes. I knew you worked for cheap.
What?
I'll give you the Medina discount.
Yes.
Oh. There you go. You got it. We're going to have a Shut Up Corbin animated.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
I feel like we opened a can of worms on the self-fulfilling prophecy stuff and kind of left you guys flat. So I think that may be what we start out next episode with. I can't promise that.
Hold on. So Polish Tabalish, how can they find you and get in contact with you? I'm sure that's good stuff to get out there.
You guys can literally find me just about anywhere by just typing in Polish Tamales in Google search. But you can find me on Twitter at Polish Tamales. You can find me on Tumblr at Polish Tamales. tumblr.com, and you can literally just find me at polishtamales.com. So I'm not hard to find.
You got the market on the SEO of Polish Tamales cornered.
Oh, heck yeah.
what does Polish Tamales mean?
It literally means a lot of people ask me about how to pronounce Polish because they think it's Polish Tamales.
Polish Tamales.
Yeah.
So do you?
Not quite, no. I think that's a sex act somewhere in Afghanistan.
That sounds dirty, yeah.
I got my tamale polished. That wasn't an Afghani accent at all.
You polish with your tamale.
Anyways, why don't you actually tell us about your name?
It's not that funny. It's actually, it's based on the fact that it's about community. Because when I was in Minnesota, there was like this pretty big Polish community. So they were very welcoming and warm. So, you know, that's how I got the Polish part. It was like the welcoming, warm community. And then the tamales part was a combination of me loving Hispanic food or Mexican food. And that, you know, tamales are special because you only get those when grandma's around.
Yeah.
So, it's a special treat. So that's pretty much where I got the name was, it's a very special treat shared with friends and family. So that's kind of like the whole concept behind the name.
That's
kind of like the sketches I do. It's something that, you know, if you're in the family, you get free sketches.
That's right. Profound. I thought it was a dick joke.
It's like a sex act that I'm trying to make a thing of, but you know, I'm working on it.
Most things are dick jokes, Jason.
Yeah.
No, no, but seriously, I really did thought it was some kind of sexually suggestive name, and now I'm completely wrong.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed actually.
Well, I'm not. I didn't think it was dirty, nor am I disappointed. I thought that was a good story.
No, I like the story. I just feel so bad.
It is a good story. Yeah.
I was like, why did I think that? Like, I'm ashamed.
It could be a sex act. I mean, it could be.
It is now. I'm gonna get to work and figure out what it is. Check Urban Dictionary for my update.
Polish, thank you again for coming on and talking with us.
Not a problem. I love you guys. So, yeah, keep on doing what you're doing.
Right on. Thank you.
Only because you said so.
And see us next week. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.